Right, Howard, please.
All right, boss.
Just to say, Paddy, that I do prefer soya milk to oat milk. So I'm not looking forward to socialism if I'm obliged to have oat milk instead of soya milk. Just thought I'd say that to get the discussion started.
Thank you. I'm glad we've started with the most important issue, and that is that soya milk curdles in coffee. How can you stand that, Howard?
Andrew, please go ahead.
Steve, nobody can hear what you're saying.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yep, okay. Thanks, Paddy. That was very, very interesting. And actually, I have to say, I thought very, very open-minded as well. About all the possibilities that are available, really, and without coming to, quite rightly, I think, without coming to any firm conclusions, I thought it was very, very interesting. Maybe for some people in the party, it might be something that they don't like very much. I don't know. I shan't speak for others, but it's something that I just my own prejudices perhaps lean me towards. But I actually sort of like the openness to the potential of nuclear power and the possibilities that that presents, across the globe, really, in terms of energy supplies. I don't know a lot about the science. In fact, I know nothing about the science, but I always keep an open mind about these things. And, it sometimes is about the least worst technology that's available to use. But to sort of counterpose that, as a sort of the flip side, I also really liked, and again, this is my personal, perhaps my personal tastes, prejudices, etc. I really like canals, and I love trains, and I love Victoriana, and all the sort of regalia and so on, and stories and so on that go along with that. I know that's not really the life that most working class people lived in Victorian England, but I read a lot of historical fiction, and but the canals and the early railways were a great driver of progress, the idea that this then develops what we could call some form of globals, not necessarily across the globe, no, but if we just think about the UK, Britain. Some form of steady state production, where production's planned and organised, and not driven by just in time imperatives, but a regularity of supply. Then that's very good. Now I also try to grow my own vegetables as much as I possibly can. And I'm not sure if there are any other mini allotmenteers on tonight, but it's been an absolute nightmare so far this year. I'm hoping that the summer will be a game of two halves. But, the one thing about the idea, and I really got that when you said, so much of these islands are... they're basically rural agricultural potential, or just not urban. There's different categories, so I'm not really sure about what the categorizations are. But really, when it comes down to food production, and I know certainly I've tried having polytunnels and things like that, we're so hidebound by the weather in this part of the world. About food production, that it's sort of we can do it, but it's sort of limited. So I just raised that. I mean, it's not a criticism. It's just I really enjoyed it. So thanks. Okay.
Steve, if you're speaking, we can't hear you.
Ah, sorry. I was just. Guys, Mike Foster. Mike Foster, please go ahead.
Hello there. Yeah, thanks for that, Paddy. Lots of interesting stuff to think about there, and good to sort of get the imagination going as well, isn't it? Thanks for that. Yeah, it's an interesting presentation. I suppose what sort of sprang to mind with myself is probably a bit more sort of gloomier than Andy's thoughts just now, but it was. You know, regarding the sort of the practicalities and the condition that the sort of overall environment will be in whenever a socialist society comes into being, if we assume that capitalism can't be run in a way which is sort of harmonious with the environment, then it's possible that, you know, as the environment gets more polluted and more depleted as capitalism progresses, you know, even if there are, you know, some attempts to sort of rectify all that at the moment. But yeah, if at the point of where, you know, a socialist revolution becomes likely, that could partly be sort of spurred on by concerns about the environment and, you know, people realizing, oh, we know it's crunch time now, we better, you know, reorganize things. So yeah, the degradation of the environment could be one of those sort of catalysts onto socialism. But yeah, I suppose my main point was that in the early days of a socialist society, if society then is inheriting a world which is quite badly damaged by pollution, a lot of the decisions that communities and decision makers will make, democratically, cooperatively, from a basis of common ownership, some of the sort of freedoms that those socialist principles would enable might be constrained by, you know, what needs to be done for, you know, the rescuing the environment. So I suppose my point was there that there might not be quite so much sort of free choice in a socialist society as to how things are run, but a lot of future decisions might be, you know, dictated almost, if that's not a very loaded word, by sort of necessities, as a consequence of, you know, cleaning up the environment. Maybe I'm being a bit too gloomy, I don't know, but I suppose, yeah, that was one thing that sprang to mind as what, you know, sort of a challenge will be at that future point. Yeah, thank you. Cheers.
Steve, what's going on with your microphone? We can't hear a word you're saying.
Steve, we can't hear you very well. In fact, we can't hear you at all.
Sorry. Hello? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yes, it's a mixed reception, though. Not for you personally, but...
Apologies. I just wanted to ask Paddy if he wanted to come back in.
I was just going to say something that Annie mentioned about, the struggle growing...
As nobody's got their hands up.
I was just talking. Have you just... I didn't realise you'd muted me as well, Steve. Sorry. Right, I'll start again. Yeah, I was just going to pick up something that Andy said about it, how, you know, the difficulty of growing stuff on allotments, and I know people who do fairly well on allotments. I mean, they do it because they enjoy doing it, I'm sure, like you do, Andy, and not because, you know, it's particularly a cheap way of doing it. It's, if you paid yourself to do it, you would be probably... you know, your vegetables would be quite expensive if you actually paid yourself a sort of a minimum wage to do it. But I was thinking, I read a year or so back the one of the New Scientist article about this claim that, you know, people in the UK could be self-sufficient if they grew garden vegetables or even stuff in window boxes and stuff like that. And the article sort of poured scorn on this idea, pointing out, you know, the actual conditions, weather conditions, soil conditions in Britain. I mean, you know, Britain does grow quite a lot of stuff, if we're just talking about this country. Root crops in particular, a lot of some wheat. But... They reckon that if you were to try and feed yourself for a year, you would need quite a large allotment, sort of about an acre, maybe two, and you'd need to grow potatoes because it's the best all round crop, but you couldn't really grow much else, so it would be a struggle. So I just offer that. And on Mike's comment about, yeah, what about a worst case scenario? I mean, I didn't want to get into worst case scenarios because We don't know, do we? Obviously, we don't know. If it comes to that, if we have to restrict what we're able to do, you know, food shortages. Yeah, we don't know at the moment. This is one reason why we don't like to create cookshops of the future, because someone might burn the cookshops down before we get there. But I was working on the basis of, you know, what if we took over now, I suppose. So in the future, well, we would have to revisit it, obviously. That was all I was going to say.
Freddie, Comrade Edwards.
Yeah, thanks, Steve, and thanks to you also, Paddy, raising obviously some very interesting points there. But I think I've already mentioned here before on previous Friday night's cases that I have for a number of years had an allotment situation. And haven't found it terribly difficult to grow sort of basic crops. If you're even just talking about things like potatoes as one, carrots, etc., lettuce and so on. And I think that could possibly be a way forward, even although you seem to have found some evidence that people have poo-pooed that idea. So it may not be an absolute answer to everything people have on their own. I know there are many allotment holders that share their food, etc., because they get a surplus of it at any given time of year. And it wouldn't take a great deal of imagination for one allotment, for example, just to grow carrots, and another allotment just to grow potatoes or turnips, whatever it might be. So I certainly think that that is something that could be developed for, and probably will be developed forward, because more and more people seem to be getting engaged in it, in allotments. They're fairly hard, certainly in the sort of Doncaster area, they're not particularly easy to come by getting an allotment. But I'm obviously conscious also about being too prescriptive about what exactly socialism is going to be like. Yeah, you know, I think we all agree that this idea of the world hunger that we have, the world hunger that we have at the moment, we say that somewhere in the region of 25,000 people are dying a day because of starvation. That could be, I think, quite easily overcome. In that scenario, under socialist society, because although there may be 25,000 dying a day, there's millions of people in food deprivation throughout the world also. And yes, it's interesting that perhaps some of the well, so 25,000 a day just now, that might have come down over the years a little bit. But on the other hand, you know, how what's the reason for it coming down? Is it perhaps because of there's more conscientiousness now about people seeking to try and assist others? You know, I remember, if you look at the number of charities there are just now, people giving up their voluntary services to help and assist others, that could possibly be part of the reason. I don't know if, as a matter of fact, maybe the capitalist class have found some new markets and so on, which they always do, or tend to. But one of the other interesting things I find is, and this is why I say about being too prescriptive, is I noted that you were perhaps using some examples when revisiting rewriting the socialist sort of handbook, if you want to call it that, of how we live and how we might live. That when you talk about, you know, street, you know, people living in a street, why, of all, you know, if it's 30 or 40 or 100 people living in the street, why all having different cookers, etc. I think that's just too prescriptive. It might be well, all very well for a barbecue together, to have quite a few people there, etc., and cooking food. Then again, maybe the coal, so the briquettes that's getting used, that the gas is getting used. Some people could come back and say, "Ah, well, just look at the waste there." If you've got 30, 40, 100 people living in the street, you know, I just can't perceive it at this time anyway, how people wouldn't want to cook their own food and have their own time when they're going to eat. I mean, how could that actually work? And I've not been persuaded yet that that sort of thing would work. When people eat, do they only ever eat at 6 o'clock at night and then not have anything after that? Which is why I make the point again. I think we need to be a little bit careful about just being too prescriptive about exactly what socialism will look like. Yes, we want wars. Certainly not wars as we know it. You know, I think that goes without saying. Certainly won't be any capitalist wars if we know it. So I think we need to be just a little bit cautious. And it's interesting, the presentation is, I think we just need to be a little bit cautious here as to how far we go in presenting to a wider audience or to the working class what socialism is going to be. I'll leave it up to them all with thanks.
Okay, well, I'll just pop in there because nobody's got a hand up. Thanks for that, Freddie. You said a few things. Just on the allotment thing to start with. I think the thing I was quoting was he wasn't saying that growing stuff in an allotment is difficult or impossible or anything. I think he was just really addressing this question of could you support yourself entirely on an allotment, and he was saying, well, basically, you know, with UK weather being what it is and soil and whatnot, it wasn't really feasible. So a lot of claims have been made rather unrealistically. I don't know if you saw that thing film about soil that we showed on Discord, I think, a couple of years ago. Basically, it was all about growing your own, being self-sufficient, and all this sort of stuff. But it was all based in Southern California. I mean, you know, trying to do that sort of thing in Yorkshire, I think you might have a bit of a different result. But anyway, then you asked about why has the number of starving people come down. I'm not exactly sure, but I think part of it is better farming techniques. But a lot of it is because the standard of living has been going up in large parts of, well, in China, in large parts of in Southeast Asia particularly, where there used to be a lot of poverty. So this is capitalism doing what it knows how to do, employing people in factories so they've got more money to buy food and things like that. Then the thing about you weren't too keen about the thing about people eating communally. So I think that what you would do, what would happen was that people would try it, wouldn't they? They would try suggesting, why don't we have you mentioned a barbecue, why don't we have a cook-up once a week in the street, see how it goes, see who wants to be involved, who doesn't. I totally get what you're saying. We don't want to seem as if we're kind of being too prescriptive or imposing things on people. If people want to do their own thing, okay, fine. But I mean, my impression, maybe you see it differently, but my impression is that a lot of people don't want to cook. I mean, a lot of people don't even know how to cook. You know, you see the popularity of things like the Just Eat platform, takeaways, instant frozen dinners. You know, lots of people just find cooking a pain in their bum and would rather avoid it. If you went out in the street and you said to random passers-by, would you rather cook your own dinner every night or go to a restaurant? I'm pretty sure I know what the answer to that would be. Go to a restaurant if it wasn't going to cost you anything, I should add. You know, there are people who just eat out all the time. So personally, I do like to cook. I know people who do like to cook. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, it does take time. Lots of people don't have the time for it, or they don't want to do it or get involved. So I think this is something that we would just try. But the essential point is, the more that we can share, the less it costs in energy and time and work and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, okay, so that's enough for people wanting to speak.
Andrew, let me take Freddie first, because I think you might want to respond to Paddy, if that's okay. Freddie, go ahead, and then Andrew.
Yeah, listen, you, Paddy in particular, and others, don't let me think I'm disagreeing with the presentation or what's been said. You know, I mean, I like you, Paddy. I mean, I enjoy cooking. I actually do. I also enjoy eating out. That's true also. So, yeah, you know, I can see situations where people will quite happily commune, sort of get together. So, yeah, you know, I think that would be a great thing to do. But just one other point, though, is when you were talking about the fish, I very much like fish. So whether or not that would be off the menu is another story. But I say that somewhat lightheartedly, but I do like fish. Thank you.
Right. Well, good. Knowing that you're a good Catholic lad, Freddie, I suppose you'll have fish for tea tonight. Andrew, please.
And here's another good Catholic lad. I really enjoyed the discussion, and in a way that well, the point I want to make actually is it's an anecdote which I hope reinforces the points that both Freddie and Paddy were making. Now, does anybody remember Elizabeth Bowes Lyons? I'm sure you do. You know, the former, the late Queen Mother. When she had her, we were all told to respect her 100th birthday. Sometime, I think, in the, probably 1990s or something like that. It was sometime in the 1990s. At that time, I lived in I used to call it an apartment. It wasn't really an apartment. It was a ground floor maisonette in a place in the Black Country called Tipton. I'd actually bought this property when I was 23 and lived there on and off, and rented it out when I didn't live there for about 13, 14 years. But anyway... The area was really going to hell in a handbasket. It was getting really bad. There were social problems. There were racial tensions. There were really quite serious crime in the area, etc., etc. And it became quite a frightening place to live, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. You know, so I remember one of my mates came round to see me one night, and he came up in his Audi TT, and he said to me, "Look, mate, you've got to get out of here. It's like fucking Beirut." The Queen Mother's birthday came up, and a couple of neighbours up and down the court, it was like a court, it was a sort of cul-de-sac, put cards through the door and said, who would like to meet up at the top of the court to have a barbecue and maybe meet each other and get to know your neighbours, etc., etc. Now, despite that it was about the Queen Mother and so on, do you know what? I'd seen all these people around for, like, years and years, walking past. I walked past them, they walked past me. I'd be going to get the train, somebody else would be coming in with their shopping, etc., etc. People didn't used to talk to each other. And because there was this sort of communal effort just to make this a good little party for people who really didn't have very much in lots of cases. Some of the flats were let
to people who were DSS benefits subscribers, some of whom even were on probation and things like this. Do you know what? It made a massive improvement to community relations. There was a massive problem by just around the corner, the street around the corner, there was a mosque. And this was just at the time when community tensions were getting really, really bad because of the Tony Blair and Iraq and all that sort of thing. And this sort of thing just helped. And I know it's nothing to do with socialism. I know it's nothing to do with like whether you like to cook your own dinner or anything like that. But I've always held on to that. And I thought, do you know what? Any way that we can just sort of sit together, get to know each other, have a chat, let ourselves sort of be ourselves in the community is just an amazing thing. And there's no judgmental kind of aspect to it or anything. Everybody really behaved themselves, and it was a really nice occasion. Everybody forgot in the end that it was all about the Queen Mother. It was all to do with just the atmosphere of just bringing the people out. Everybody was so sort of, I think, uplifted by it. So I know that's probably a controversial thing to say at one of our meetings, but anyway, I'm glad that it happened. And I'm also glad that I moved away from there fairly soon after that. Anyway, thanks.
Thanks, Andy. Right. Comrade Cumming, please.
Yes, I read a book many years ago. Probably most of you have read it as well. It's called News from Nowhere. And in that book, the dreamer, or whatever we call him, a lot of it's more vague to me now, but I think the people that he encountered that were living in the socialist society, I think they occupied a rather large house, and I think it seemed to be perhaps a couple of dozen of them lived in the same premises, and they all helped each other out in the various tasks around the house. And it's that kind of communal activity that might, I don't think we want to prescribe it, but it might just develop organically in capitalism, in socialism, that, I mean, it has to a certain extent developed in capitalism by some people living in communes and such like, and they work or don't work to various extents. So in socialism, I think it might be easier for more people to live together and cooperate, perhaps not a whole street all cooking at the same time, but perhaps somewhat larger houses with more people in them that would make a lot of tasks easier, like looking after children and so on. It wouldn't mean that the two people who were the parents of these children had to devote so much of their time to the children, but were able to do other things by virtue of the fact that there were other people there, other adults there, who could share that task. So I think things could develop organically without society over-prescribing how people might live. The other thing that occurred to me, I remember Brian Cox, the professor, that is, not the actor, talking a few years ago about the possibilities that would be opened up if we could harness fusion, because the amount of energy that would make available to everyone on the planet would be so immense, and it would preclude the need that capitalism has to pollute the planet and whatnot. It looks like that sort of technology is still a bit away, but nevertheless, that's something that he seemed quite optimistic that we might be able to harness that energy a bit better in the future. So that's something that makes me think that although in capitalism, nuclear power doesn't seem to have a good reputation, but that's mainly, I think, because it's quite literally been weaponized, and people quite rightly don't want to die in a nuclear holocaust. But if the energy is turned to peaceful uses, then you know, things can be quite different, and we can be very careful about how we dispose of radioactive material. There's some of the dangers that occur in capitalism are probably just arising from the nature of capitalism itself, much as they do try, I think, their best to make it safe. But there's a limit to how much they're going to spend to make something safe. So I think we could be quite optimistic about what we could do in a socialist society. The problem is, the longer that capitalism lasts, the more damage it's likely to do to the environment, destroying other species and so on, that it might be that when we go, if we do die out, then the other animals might, that's the ones that are aware of us, might just exhale a sigh of relief that, well, these great apes, they were awful noisy, they wrecked things, and here we are, maybe we can get back to normal now. Of course, not so many of these animals think in such detail, so far as we know, but that's just a thought that occurs to me. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Doogie, please.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's good to talk about these things and talk about what socialism can do. The only trouble is everybody thinks reformism is the only game in town, right? You know, voting for the Labour Party or the Greens or whatever in this country or in America, you've got the choice between the Democrats and the Republicans, right? Yeah. And the progressive people seem to support the Democrats, right? Yeah. But I mean, how do you get people to see all these problems as part of capitalism and socialism as a solution instead of just going for reforms or whatever? People seem to think reforms are the only game in town and that they've got to vote Labour, even although they know that they might be just like a watered-down Conservative Party or whatever, you know. So I don't know how we get around that, really, you know. And another thing I would mention is global warming and migration. You know, migration's set to become record levels, and all the countries seem to be using it as a weapon to get the right wing into power in various countries, really, you know. So I don't know. I mean, putting forward socialism to ourselves is all very well, but I think most people just think reform's the only game in town. So I don't know what we do about that, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Doogie. Do you want to come back in, Paddy?
Yeah, sure. Well, to take the last point first, Dougie's point, I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, you're right, aren't you? People only see reformism as the way forward because that's the narrative that they're being presented with. And, you know, how do we get people to understand the socialist alternative? Well, you know, good question. We're not doing very well. We've never done very well. All I can say is, I mean, fortunately, it's not entirely up to us. I think I've been encouraged. I know, I'm pretty sure Howard has been encouraged. Howard, I'm putting you on the spot here, because of the number of books that, in the last couple of years that have been putting ideas very similar to our idea and our set of ideas, and, you know, just sort of indicting capitalism as a system. And, you know, I don't know what the circulation of these books is likely to be. I mean, I don't know how many people are actually likely to read them. But the fact that people are out there writing these books, I think that is sort of the scope for some sort of optimism on that score. I also think that, you know, the concern among young people over the environment, I think, is a lot higher than it is for older generations. Probably because they're, you know, I think we generally accept that global warming is already here. We're already seeing freak weather events that are being ascribed to global warming. You know, those of us who are quite old, well, okay, we're not necessarily that bothered, but young people in their sort of teens and 20s, you know, they've got decades of this to look forward to. So they feel this quite keenly. And the question is whether they sort of tie global warming and, you know, these sort of problems, species extinction, to the behaviour of capitalism. I mean, there are people who are saying this. I mean, George Monbiot has been saying this for years. Lots of other people are also saying this. So, in general, I think things are going in our direction in terms of public awareness. Despite this, there being a sort of apparent polarisation, well, particularly you see this in Europe during the recent elections, and also in the States, where you've got this polarisation of hard right and then, well, I would like to say hard left, but no, soft left. So the sort of dialectic is hard at work in these societies. So that's a bit of a ramble. I don't really have an answer for that. How do people get to see our solution? You know, well, hopefully in the future we can try and put out more videos and things like that. It was suggested that this SAPA pamphlet, this Socialism as Practical Alternative, if and when we finally sort of rewrite it, it could be issued as a series of videos, YouTube videos, which I think is a really good idea. Because I think, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about what's wrong with capitalism and not what the solution is, what the alternative is. So, you know, if we put out a little bit more stuff about that, that would definitely help. Just going to John, you said something about, you were talking about communal living, that was it, and you know, why that might be a good thing for some people. I think it's also a good antidote for loneliness, isn't it? Loneliness is a big source of mental health problems in Western society, because there's something quite atomizing about Western society. You know, everyone's at home in front of their own TV, in front of their own computer, you know, they've got everything they need in the room with them. It reminds me of that short story, The Machine Stops. You know, everybody's in their own little cell and no one ever goes out of it. Capitalism, or at least advanced capitalism, seems more and more like that. So I think going back to what Andy said earlier, you know, you get a bunch of people, even in a really rough estate, rough area, get together for something like the Queen Mother, like her birthday, but who cares what the reason is. They get together and they actually have a good time, and you know, and they're all a little bit surprised by that. You know, they're surprised at the humanity they discover in each other. And that's a sort of sign of how socially alienated a lot of us are, that we're even surprised at that. So I think communal living, while, you know, yes, in response to Freddie's earlier point, yes, we're not going to prescribe that or impose that on people, people would get a lot of benefit out of it, I think. And also it's really good for parents, you know. So I'll stop there. I was going to say something about nuclear fusion, but I won't, so I'll stop.
Ready? You need to unmute, Freddie.
I didn't hear you bite me, Steve.
Oh, right, sorry, I did.
Well, yeah, I know you did, mate, because I've unmuted myself. Yeah, listen, I mean, Andy did make a fair point there about the street party, et cetera, with the Queen. But there are many, many examples of that over the years, really, overall, aren't there? When the King was getting bloody, well, when Charlie Boy was getting his crown put on him, etc. There's been many, when he got married and all that sort of stuff, there's been many examples of that over the years of street parties and such like. I mean, I just wonder if there'd even been a street party if England had won the championship there. But anyway, that's another story. It's just to pick up on some of the points that Paddy was saying. Last weekend, for the first time, I've been to a number of miners' galas over the years in South Yorkshire, but went to one last weekend in the Durham Miners' Gala. And that for me, despite it being a horrible, miserable day that rained most of the day, there was about 150,000 people there. And obviously a few members of the party were there and we were handing out leaflets and talking to people and such like. And what's your usual sort of left wing, what presently at the SWP and so on, were there. The number of people that we got talking to was greatly encouraging. Now, whether or not any of that is going to be manifest itself in people contacting the party, I don't know. But just picking up what Paddy was saying there, there is, as I say, I was greatly encouraged last weekend, being up there at Durham, with the number of people that were there, the leaflets that were handed out, standards that were mainly handed out, truth be told, the receptiveness of many of the people that we were talking to was really greatly encouraging. And I would certainly, well, I know it will be coming from other members of the party, is for the party to consider having a greater presence next year up at that Durham Miners Gala. Because if they can get 150,000 out there on that particular occasion with the miserable weather it was, then goodness knows how many there could have been there on a better day. And just one other point is, this, you can see though how capitalism can react at times also with the this Just Stop Oil campaigner that's been given 5.5 years. I think it was 5.5 years he was given, along with some of these cohorts, how capitalism and the judiciary system can act against people. Okay, Just Stop Oil might not have been doing himself any favours in many ways, but I think it's something we can look out for as the threat of socialism starts to take a greater effect. Thanks.
Thanks, Freddie. As nobody's got hands up just right now, Just to remind people, that, I mean, there's some sort of, although I mean, I totally agree with this idea that we're not prescriptive as a political organisation. I mean, I don't think that we should be in any doubt at all about the fact that socialism will be a more communal type of living, because we're at a stage now where we're targets of. Of the capitalist system, we are sort of encouraged towards this individualism, towards individual consumerism, purely for the market's sake, rather than taking part in cooperative activities. We become consumers in every part of our lives, whether it be go to a football match these days, and what do you get? You get bloody adverts flashed at you all the time. Watch it on the telly and you get betting adverts flashed at you all the time. We are becoming socially crippled by the way that the market is tries to encourage us to live. Right, that's my burble over. Howard, please.
Since it's been mentioned, just to go off on a bit of a tangent, I was shocked by the Just Stop Oil sentences. It sort of gave me a bit of a jolt because it plays into the argument that people sometimes put up against our arguments that, we sort of encouraging people to show that they want something different, etc. But what will the powers that be do as soon as that kind of thing manifests itself? They'll clamp down. This is what they've done here. I mean, I suspect those sentences might get reduced on appeal, something like that. But nevertheless, it's something that it's an argument, if you like, that if people put to us, we need to sort of sharpen up, if you like, because that kind of thing does tend to sort of, as I say, play into the idea that the capitalist class, the system, will not let us establish socialism because they will they will clamp down in a sort of draconian way once an idea becomes sort of widespread, as it were. I know that the Just Stop Oil idea isn't widespread, but nevertheless, quite a lot of people will be sympathetic and I'm sure be shocked about about the extent to which these people have been penalised.
Thanks, Howard. Andrew?
Yeah, equally, Howard, I was completely dumbfounded by that. I just thought it was, just absolutely draconian, the sort of thing that you might see in, some other sort of society that I wouldn't have thought would be like this in Britain. But the more I learn about the Britain and Britain's legal system, the less surprised I'm being. We think about the post office people, and I only found out a couple of weeks ago that my local sub postmaster. She's been on the television now a couple of times. I can't remember her name. Who worked at a very small, very, very small village post office called the Lazy Hill Post Office, actually went to jail while she was pregnant. And the state had the full knowledge about that. And they just banged her up because they didn't want to, admit any guilt, really, like on themselves. They wouldn't sort of own it, so to speak. I know it's going off the subject a little bit. The only thing about the Just Stop Oil people is I've got mixed feelings about that because, I mean, ultimately, they're a sort of a group of vigilantes, really. And some of the things they did, the tactics, were actually quite inhumane, I think, in terms of the way they affected people. Not just holding up people going on, drive a lorry or, do something to make a profit. But, they would have known full well that there were people potentially carrying blood supplies. There would have been people trying to get to hospital appointments, etc., etc., etc. Now, I'm not saying that you deserve 5 years in jail for that. No way, but you deserve a slap on the wrists from Andy Davis for that. So I think it's wrong to conflate how things would be in a potentially pre-revolutionary situation, because basically, there'd be a mass of opinion there behind that. These people are quite a small group who express, quite strongly held views and also widely held views, but like the tactics are not very good. So I'm just trying to put a counterpoint to what you've said there, Howard. I'm not saying, I agree with any of it one way or the other, just to put a counterpoint. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. So we've got John in next, please. John, come in.
Yes, I also thought that sentence was rather savage, but I wasn't surprised by it because for some time the government had been complaining about the police not acting vigorously enough and so on. And I think they introduced some legislation. I can't remember the details of it. I wasn't that surprised, although It was a bit shocking, you know, to see such a savage sentence. And some of the judges' comments reminded you of, you know, reactionary old judges in, that we were assured were in the past. But these things are never in the past as long as you've got capitalism. Capitalism wheels out reaction as and when it needs to. But I think the crucial difference will be for us when we start to become not even a majority, but just more noticeable. Is that people will come to the growing realization that the basic facts of life in capitalism are such that there's more of us than there are of them. We're the ones that do everything in society, but we do it for their benefit. This is a point that we make all the time to our fellow workers, but workers have been conditioned not to trust their own judgment, not to be certain about what to do, and to feel that they need leadership. Well, we don't need leadership. And when there's more people like us who don't need leadership, we'll sweep this world like an avalanche. Unfortunately, I won't see that. But it's a thing that as long as there are people and as long as society, one tiny minority of parasites live off the backs of the majority, that will be something that will tend to produce this idea against that society. Because a lot of people are aware of how they're being, well, they're not aware of the detail of it, but they know that capitalism is not in their interest, but they don't call it capitalism, and they just think it's rich bastards or politicians. They don't have a coherent view of it. But once there is a growing coherence amongst the wage slave class about their class position in society, then, as I say, capitalism won't stand a chance. It's because people have been encouraged not to think and not to trust their own judgment that we have this present predicament of living in a society where we do all the work, we make everything possible, but only a tiny percentage of the population is able to see half the marvels that we make available. So that's all I have to say at the moment. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Comrades, it's gone 9 o'clock. If the meeting, I mean, I don't know whether if there's anybody that's not spoken that wants to come in. If not, I'm going to invite Paddy to. Ask Paddy if he wants to do some summing up. So if you want to speak, put your hand up now, or forever hold your peace.
I just want to respond to this last point about this sentence for Just Stop Oil. It's difficult, isn't it? Because I mean, Just Stop Oil are not popular with the press. I don't, you know, you. I noticed that the Daily Star refers to them as Tarquins, which is quite funny, and it's a bit unfortunate that some of the people sentenced had really posh names. So that kind of plays into that, you know, stereotype about environmentalism being a very middle class stroke bourgeois. Concern, but the public, you know, the public really resent being personally inconvenienced, and there is this sort of mentality that, you know, can't they just protest without throwing paint all over paintings or Stonehenge? You know, in other words, it isn't just the government, this is the public, this is the general public thing. It's like, can't they just protest politely, you know, instead of squirting ink over flowers at the Chelsea Flower Show and all these other things that, you know, they've got in the news for doing. So that aspect of it is quite sort of counterproductive. But on the other hand, to give a personal anecdote, my daughter went to a London demo just a few weeks ago, a very peaceful demo, sort of carnival atmosphere, you know, with some celebs in tow. It was all about preserving nature for the future. I mean, you know, whatever that means exactly. But the upshot was that it got almost no coverage. I think The Guardian did a piece about it, but there was nothing in the BBC about it. Most of the other papers, I don't think, covered it. And my daughter was quite angry about this. She'd spent 14 hours, you know, travelling on a coach to get there to do this, to find that, you know, most of the press weren't interested. And her reluctant conclusion was that you have to be more extreme. You have to do what Just Stop Oil or Extinction Rebellion are doing, because if you don't, no one takes any notice of you. So I don't know whether that means she's going to go and chain herself to a bulldozer or something, but that is the situation you're in. If the government lets you do it, I think this has been said, if the government lets you do it, it's because they know it doesn't work. This is George Monbiot said the same thing today in The Guardian. If they let you do it, it's because they know it doesn't work. If they stop you doing it, that's because they know it works. I just think it would be nice if we as socialists could find ways of getting in the news which didn't involve getting banged up for 5 years. You know, what we're doing doesn't work either. You know, we're not being, no one's taking any notice of us either. So, you know, I think there is an argument for looking at some direct action sort of things to get noticed. But, yeah, really, what are we doing if we're not getting noticed? And that was the problem my daughter was also facing. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say.
All right, buddy. Paddy, thanks very much for your efforts tonight, and thanks to all the other comrades for attending and for your contributions. And I wish you all a good evening.